Hello and welcome to the IGTRASpace podcast. My name is Nora Engelbert. Together with Margret Jäger, I'm welcoming you to today's episode for a series on applied anthropology. Margret and I are eager to show experienced team leads, C-levels, and HR representatives the value anthropology brings to the table to help you thrive your business success. Anthropology is about a holistic view on everything that makes us human and on how we as humans perceive and interact with the world. So, anthropology is key for business fields like customer experience, doctor-patient interactions, communication, team building, the intersection of humans and technology like AI, robotics, or any customer interfaces, and for the analysis and differentiation of culture, structure, and technology in organizations and communities. Lean back, listen in, and let yourself be inspired by the stories and insights from our guests here in the IGTRASpace, under the tree of life. Hello and welcome to our next podcast recording on applied anthropology. Today, our guest is the wonderful Mirko Pasquini. Hello, Mirko.
Hi, I'm really pleased to be here. So I'm Mirko Pasquini and I'm an assistant professor at the University of Gothenburg at the School of Global Studies in Sweden, Gothenburg in Sweden. And basically, I'm a medical anthropologist and during my career, I have been doing much about hospital ethnography. So I have been working mainly with hospitals and mistrust against healthcare institutions and violence against healthcare practitioners. I also have been working on hospital overcrowding, and my upcoming book, which is called The Negotiation of Urgency, Economies of Attention in an Italian Emergency Room, will be out with Rutgers University Press next June. So I'm very excited for that.
That's soon.
Yeah, that's very soon. And it's really exciting. So it's a monograph. So it's basically kind of I try to unpack the story of an emergency room being an ethnographer for 1 year and following the same shift as nurses and doctors. So basically really living the ER experience in that sense.
So that sounds like a bit what some of us might know from TV series, going in emergency rooms, what is happening in hospitals actually. So you were delving into it, being part of that life, really?
Yeah, what is interesting is that, you know, the ER people actually hate, you know, really cannot stand TV series about the ER.
Like, they really I wonder why.
They really hate it. They really cannot stand it. Only Scrubs, sometimes for some episodes, kind of save itself, but it's the only series. You know, Dr. House is the most hated. Then there is, you know, like the Grey's Anatomy comes second, probably, but kind of the more mainstream you go, the worse it is. And what they actually say is that because, you know, their life is completely different from that. The majority of patients that you actually see are over 75. They have multiple chronic conditions. So no beautiful patient kind of that you have to save the life and fall in love in. That's usually not something that really happens all the time. But instead, you have to deal with, you know, mistrust, violence. You have to deal with desperate kind of social conditions. So it's really a hub to see how, you know, the neglected part of the population are actually kind of struggling to survive and at the same time trying to recur to medical practitioners to turn social issues into medical ones because they basically don't have any other access to state welfare. So it's really kind of a struggling place.
Okay, so thanks for warning us. So this episode today and when we read your book, actually, then it's not just the fun part of good-looking doctors, but really getting at the core of what is probably one of the most urgent things our societies have to deal with. That's what I got at least from what you're saying now and a bit of what we talked about in the preparation talk.
Yeah, and I mean, it's still kind of a place full of humor. So in order to actually deal with so much conflict and so on and so forth, they really need to joke a lot. So it is a place in which irony and humor are heavily used, because they also have to deal, you know, with death, suffering on a daily basis. So in that sense, the use of humor really helps, and the kind of, you know, being part, it was really an experience for me to become part of a team but have to face these kind of challenges on a daily basis. And at the same time, I kind of became the psychologist of the whole team, because everybody kind of turned to me to ask what I thought about the different kind of cases of people that were confronted with when it comes to suffering, when it comes to social problems and so on and so forth, but also their personal kind of, you know, challenges in dealing with other suffering. And also we have to remember that more and more emergency room conditions, like working condition of emergency workers, is becoming increasingly harsh. And this, you know, in Italy is particularly the case. This could be actually seen as a global trend, but in Italy this is particularly the case. More and more privatization and less, you know, staffing, and at the same time also funding for hospitals are making the situation way worse.
I'm just about, because I already again feel your passion for your topic. And of course, when you were part of the team and you surely became friends and built up relationships, your passion is really felt. And I'm sure our audience will too. Just quickly, before we might now get lost, we're already delving deeper into it. The audience knows we usually focus on certain topics and prepare, like, what is the reason why you would say, yes, I am not only a psychologist, as you just said, but an anthropologist and an applied anthropologist. So what have you brought with us today to show students, but also hospitals or organizations on communities, why anthropologists are needed and what value they can bring?
So today I wanted to talk about an increasing global phenomenon, which is the violence against healthcare workers. So violence against healthcare workers is becoming more and more societal. It has been defined as a societal threat, and the Global Association of Medical Doctors have been calling this as a pandemic of increasingly broad proportions. And the phenomenon is strikingly growing. What is interesting there, as an anthropologist, I see violence not only as, you know, just a phenomenon, a standing alone phenomenon, but as something that can actually help us understand the newer conditions in which healthcare is performed and constructed as a system. And I'm going to just give you some examples. So for instance, when we talk about violence against healthcare workers, we have to define, like, what it is this is about. And this can go from insults to peer pressure to psychological violence until, you know, beating, punching and stabbing and even shooting.
Okay, that are actually things we don't see on TV. That is very true.
Yeah, I mean, the reality of, you know, everyday life in the ER, you have the 3% of nurses that actually have been held at gunpoint at least once in their career, in the Italian setting, for instance. So you basically expect violence to erupt at a certain point in your day. So you are really overly aware of that understanding. So as an anthropologist, I can, you know, describe our awareness and what it does to clinical practice in practice. And at the same time, I can actually see the connection between violence that is perpetrated against healthcare workers and the structural violence that is instead part of the experience of patients that do not find any other answer for their increasing chronic and increasing social problems in the welfare system, but instead recur to the ER because they have no other alternatives. So the ER becomes kind of a hub where people go in desperation, in the sense that they cannot find any other place. And through that, they basically are funneled in this place in which kind of they can actually get help only if they find something that, you know, medical enough to reach for care, but it's usually connected to way more problems that are related to social conditions rather than just, you know, critically medical acute issues, which is usually what they are is for.
I see. So maybe we could unpack that very complex and interconnected topic. Margaret, you have already in previous recordings mentioned the aspect of violence against nurses, violence against people working in healthcare. And today we have the chance to delve deeper into that with Mirko. But as I understood, you were also working on that. And we are also every time, nearly, pointing out that one very important value of anthropologists is that we have a holistic approach. So would you like to give us also a hint on your work here and how that might be related to what Mirko just said?
Yeah, thank you very much, Nora. Indeed, like Mirko and I got known each other about 7 or 8 years ago, and he was working already in this context, and I started to get interesting, and we are both interested in health workers' education. So this was the context mm-hmm. where we met. And since then, we are keeping this dialogue. And at the same time where he was doing his research, I started a research that later was impacted by the pandemic in an Austrian hospital, and which clearly showed, for example, how the architecture of an ER waiting room may contribute even more to the appearance of violent incidents. So why is this? Because if you think of the last waiting room of an ER where you went, I don't know if our audience went there sooner or a long time ago, but they are not waiting friendly, most of them. And in many, many cases, people wait there for 3, 4, 5, 6, or even 12 hours, as you can read later in Mirko's book. And if I learned from him from the Italian case, and this makes you nervous, this makes you anxious. Where is the next bathroom where I can get some food or drinks? And there is already enough literature how you can build up an emergency waiting room in a way that people get less aggressive while waiting, that people feel comfortable as possible in this moment. And sometimes it's just ignored, you know. It's about cheap furniture. It's about sitting as many people as possible in a waiting area, but not considering, okay, what happens if somebody waits there with a child, for example. And we did a nice comparison in one of our presentations for a Brazilian conference, I remember, Mirko, some 2 or 3 years ago, where Mirko has drawn how the waiting area in this ER in Italy looks like. And I did the same more or less for the Austrian case. And it's very anthropological, you know, because we perceive the human being in a holistic way. And then you put a human being in an ER waiting room. And if you don't think holistically, then again, it may turn into a disaster where violence happens while waiting. And as an outsider and as a totally healthy person, when you look at such maps, yeah, you can do mapping of that or even at the pictures or plans for those rooms, you clearly see, okay, this is not favorable for calming you down, for feeling okay for waiting 6 to 8 hours.
Okay. So that is then the situation in front of the emergency room. So we have the outside context, what happened to the patient to get him or her inside there. And then we later have the emergency room itself. So I get it. I've been there and it's not a nice place usually, also not in Germany. But Mirko, you said you wanted to look at that as a pandemic that is actually causing and leading to more violence on all levels of society. That's what I understood. Could you take us maybe with you more into that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. What is interesting, you know, this is actually a metaphor that comes directly from the emergency workers. So they actually talk in these terms. So the emergency room can be thought as a window towards the external world. So it's a magnifying lenses to actually see. It's kind of, it's isolated as a place because it's a single place and has its own role, but it also really opens up what you usually wouldn't see in society otherwise. Because all the people that actually come to the ER, they often don't find any alternative to the ER itself. And we are talking about, so the 70% of people that come into an emergency room in Italy, for instance, they shouldn't be there in practice because they don't have medical issues, but they have social problems.
Mm.
And we're talking about, you know, 1/3 of the Italian population every year goes to the ER. We're talking about 20, 25 million people. So we're talking about a lot of people, right? And 70% of those people actually shouldn't be there in practice, according to the ER, right? So you see the proportion of the problem also in numbers. And the proportion of the problem is, of course, that, you know, if you don't find any other solution and you end up into the ER, because you don't, you know, don't have welfare, don't have housing, or have, you know, mental health problems which are not taken care for, or have chronic conditions but don't have continuity of care but you should have. And we're talking about also a country like Italy, which is the second more eldest country in the world.
I thought that was Germany, but okay.
Okay, really?
But yes, Europe is getting older, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course that means that continuity of care really matters. So in some, you know, violence is really about having alternatives. So criminalizing and, you know, just, you know, using guards more and more in an emergency room actually creates even more violence, because it kind of fuels the spiraling effect, for which the more structural violence, the more physical and psychological violence, then the more violence overall. Whereas if you actually cut down the structural violence, and with structural violence, I mean the impossibility to actually reach for care outside the emergency room, then people will have alternatives. So anthropology can really build those connections and those alternatives at a community level. I have been invested in working with emergency workers and primary care networks to build those alternatives in, first of all, you know, having a space in the emergency room for a case manager or for, you know, different kind of figures, which would be from anthropologists to psychologists or for nurses, you know, having a particular training to link up people with other realities, which can be civil society associations, social work, and so on and so forth, to take care of the root problem, but actually lead people to the ER. Because then, you know, you prevent violence from really kind of manifesting in this way.
And I would like to jump in here, because this is like amazing, you know, like acting in the ER room. What they're doing in some Austrian hospitals, mainly in Vienna, is they installed a GP practice in front of the ER. So they do a triage and they could lower the frequency of people in the ER with the act that the GP does the triage and takes the people away who are not, do not have emergent issues, and try to or care for them or direct them to other services, or tell them, look, this is, we check you and then you go to your own GP tomorrow or on Monday or whatever.
Does everyone know what a GP is?
A general practitioner. So this had brought quite an impact. And what they do in the UK and what is coming now to other countries as well as Austria is social prescribing. I don't know if you have heard of that, Nora, but Mirko knows it. It is realizing, yes, that people go to the GP, but they have social problems. And the GP cannot solve these social problems, but other people can assist people. So they basically established the function of a social prescriber, which in the UK is not always a nurse or a social worker, but an own professional group. In other countries, it's a nurse or a social worker or sometimes a psychologist, and they then help further. So if an elderly lady comes frequently to the GP because she's lonely and she needs some social care, some social attention, she would then be addressed to some community meetings for elderly people, for example, or also to some psychological assistance and so. And this is kind of the NHS from the National Health System in the UK developed approach. At the end should create the situation that the ER room, the emergency room, is not crowded. But it's much more holistic. And from an anthropological perspective, I believe Mirko agrees on that. It's super interesting how you try to, it's not prevention, but it's early detection of health and social issues and intervene earlier before people end up in the ER?
My brain is now like running wild because of all the associations I have in my mind. Mirko and Margaret, would you then say that's not only what we said, that anthropologists are able to connect the dots and bring in interventions in an earlier stage to take away the pressure of, yeah, if it's going bad, the ER is the last room a person is in. So starting earlier. So my question now is, I mean, I come from a countryside. My father and my grandfather were general practitioners, and it was a functioning small town, nearly village. So all the social aspects around, they were part of what a general practitioner did or what the other people in the practice did, what my mom did all her life, like taking care, maintaining relationships, talking to people, looking at the context. So that was very normal for me. But what you are now describing seems like the entire balance of the society got out of balance and got destroyed. And what anthropologists working in that field, what you describe, what you do, Mirko and Margaret, sounds to me like getting the balance back and getting the society as such healthy and functioning again, to intervene in a much earlier stage. That is what comes up to my mind. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually very interesting because, you know, the old problem of violence, in that sense, it still relates to a very, very old debate, which is, you know, how we are dividing artificially medicine from society. And instead, medicine is so much part of society, but at the same time also, to be a good physician or a good nurse or a good, you know, health provider, you have to have competencies that actually encompass social forces. Because otherwise, you know, you would not know how social forces, first of all, impact your practice and your ability to actually be able to be a good clinician. Second of all, you would not know how your patients are actually affected by those forces. You know, for example, if I stitch up a person for, you know, work-related injury, but that person continues to do a heavily underpaid, you know, in the black market without any possibility to actually have any security control measure, and it does that work, you know, on a daily basis, that person would get injured worse and worse. You would stitch up that person, you know, constantly, and you would probably end up seeing that person with much worse injuries than today. So then, you know, it's really like the difference between putting a plaster on, a band-aid, over a much bigger problem, or actually trying to address the real problem.
I completely get you. And in business anthropology or in business life as transformation manager, focusing on healthy collaboration and effective collaboration, effective communication, it is very similar. And I always say, okay, I didn't end up to be a general practitioner as many people wanted me to, but in the end, I also take care of health and of people's health and business health, corporate health, the healthy relationships. It all comes down to me that what we are all working on is fixing the alienation and getting us living good connectivity again, because things are interconnected. But we had this artificial, as you already said, this artificial separation, like business is not society, medicine is not society. But in the end, what it all comes down to, no, we are interconnected people and we should take care of ourselves and each other. And with that, the emergencies wouldn't be crowded.
Absolutely, Nora. I fully agree what you're saying, and I fully agree what Mirko said. We lost kind of connection to each other, and in like we go to work and to an institution, to a private business, and work is work, and there is health workers' protection for not getting harmed for certain things, but why should your job harm you? And in the case of a hospital with an ER, people get hurt while doing their job. I deeply believe that every hospital needs an anthropologist. I deeply believe that.
More than one.
Yeah, or more than one. But I deeply believe in that, because we are able to go into such an institution and in one day you feel, you see, and you can argument what's going on here and why things are going wrong. And some things are personal communication issues. Yeah, we all have that. You do not like any person you meet in your life. But many things are framed by the structures we work in. And for me, it starts like a medical doctor in Austria in an Austrian hospital works 24-hour shifts. This is not necessary. Nobody of us works well working 24 hours. And we expect as society this from our doctors, for those who care for our health. In other countries, in other hospitals, doctors work 8 to 12-hour shifts like nurses do. And this is much healthier, you know? So there are so many bigger and smaller aspects of structural things, and also communication. Anthropologists also can help solve these, what they always call cultural conflicts or communication problems.
I see we need more recording sessions. There's so much more to say. But as we are already over time, and Mirko, your topic is just too important and very, very interesting. I'm so much looking forward to read your book. And now I would like to give you the chance to say the conclusion and the last word of today's recording and the work you do. Why anthropology is valuable to your field.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for having me. And so anthropology is valuable for health and healthcare and for hospitals, because it really creates the sense that a hospital is both an isolated but also a permeable place. And it can really be the window through which we can look at broader society and we can actually act on broader society. Because hospitals are so much core places within our own societies, which is full of conflict and mistrust and problems, but in which, you know, is kind of a great starting place where to address those conflicts. And anthropology can really help us seeing the different links that create those conflicts and how we can, from there, create trust and solidarity and create also patients' participation, because that's also a great resource to avoid violence against healthcare workers. And as you know, really community level and creating kind of a patient associations and patient participation within designing and creating a better healthcare for all. And anthropology can really help us doing that.
Thank you, Mirko. What a wonderful last statement. And thanks, Margaret, for this great session again we had. Yes, to the audience, please, if you have questions, if you have comments, if you have complaints, if you have anything that comes up to your mind, don't hesitate. Contact us. Look for Mirko and his contact details and especially his upcoming book, and grab it, read it. We can all learn from Mirko. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is produced in collaboration with the Applied Anthropology Network of the European Association of Social Anthropologists. Thank you for listening in and being with us today. If you wish to learn more about us or our guests, please check on the ICTRA Space website, www.ictra-space.org/en, or contact us directly via info@ictra-space.org. We are happy to answer your questions and to hear your thoughts on the value anthropology has or could have for your daily work. Looking forward to sitting with you again next episode in the ICTRA space under the Tree of Life.